start first with Commonwealth versus Sarah Beth Smith. Okay. Mr. Curry, you'll have 15 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
In this case, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Okay. You can start whenever you're ready, and I will let you know when your time's up.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Liam Curry, and I represent the Commonwealth of Virginia in this matter as the appellant. I'd like to focus on what I think are two primary errors that were committed by the trial court when it granted the motion to suppress in this case. First, while the trial court found that the officer's entry into and protective sweep within the residence was unlawful, it's clear from the record that no evidence was seized or even observed as a result of these actions.
Mr. Curry, this is Judge Petty. I'd like to ask you about that argument because I think your reliance on Williams and Dawson is certainly compelling. But I was looking at the Commonwealth's objection to the suppression order and the court's response. The Commonwealth objected, saying that the court did not consider that argument or address that argument. The trial court, however, in its response, specifically said, remarkably, after a thorough review of both the transcript and the pleadings, the court was unable to discern where the Commonwealth addressed any of the above issues in its arguments or pleadings, other than in the objection filed, the objection to the final order. Can you point me to where in the record the Commonwealth made the argument that the affidavit was sufficient, even discounting whatever observations were made during the protective sweep?
Your Honor, there was no specific point in the trial court where an argument was made by the Commonwealth that if you excise from the affidavit any observations that were obtained by the officers during the entry into the home, that the warrant would have been otherwise valid and supported by probable cause. That argument wasn't made because there was no challenge to the probable cause to support the warrant.
Well, don't you have a 5A18 problem then? I mean, you're basically asking us to use a right result, wrong reason analysis. But your argument would clearly require some additional fact-finding by the trial court.
Well, I think what we have in this case, Your Honor, is we have a trial court that has made a finding that the officers had probable cause. And we don't. We have the officers had probable cause to obtain and seek the issuance of a search warrant. The trial court even found that the officers were in possession of probable cause before they even arrived at the residence. So, because neither party had asserted that the search warrant was not supported by probable cause, the Commonwealth had no reason to defend the presumptively valid search warrant against attack.
Well, shouldn't the Commonwealth attorney have made the argument that, Your Honor, this evidence that we wish to introduce was found pursuant to the search warrant. The search warrant was issued based on probable cause, and the case law, the Williams case particularly that you cite, says it's a valid search warrant. Should it have made that argument?
The argument that was made that most closely addresses that issue is in, let's see, in the Smith case, I'm looking at that appendix, on page 15 of the appendix, the Commonwealth presents the argument that there was probable cause to support the issuance of a search warrant. And the and then on page 19 of the appendix, the Commonwealth also notes that a search warrant was obtained. And because there was no challenge to the search warrant, the trial court lacked any basis for lacked any basis for suppressing evidence that was obtained by a search warrant that was unchallenged and, upon review, was supported by probable cause.
All right. Thank you.
I guess if I could, I'd like to So the two main errors that I wanted to focus on, one was that there was nothing was actually, there were no fruits of any sort of unlawful entry into the residence. So there was no, even if that entry was unlawful, there is nothing to suppress. Second,
Mr. Kerr, let me ask you about that one too, because I had some question about that. Jardine, and as interpreted subsequently by our Supreme Court in Aprisco, appears to announce a rule that if an officer goes on to the premises of another with the purpose of conducting some kind of search, that is not an invited entry, and it is not permitted. Here, the trial courts, I think, made a pretty clear finding that the social worker and the GALs employing those two people for a welfare check of the children was a ruse. So doesn't that mean that the police officer's discovery of the odor of marijuana once they were on the premises would have to be exercised from the affidavit in order to evaluate it?
Well, Your Honor, I would think there's a couple of issues with the Jardines argument that I believe was only raised in Mr. Cockrell's response brief, but I'll be happy to address it in this case. First, in Jardines is clearly distinguishable because in that case, the officers came onto the curtilage of someone's home, a protected space, with a drug sniff dog for the purpose of conducting a search. And then the Supreme Court found that that was an uninvited, unlicensed intrusion onto the home. Now, what happened in this case, so for Jardine to apply to this case, there needs to be some sort of property rights violation. But the objective conduct of the officers and the guardian ad litem were individuals simply approaching the front door of the residence, which the guardian ad litem is entitled to do, and which the officers are entitled to do.
Mr. Liam, what was the finding by the trial court relating to factual findings as to purpose to walking up to the door? What was their purpose for being there?
Let's see. My understanding is that the trial court found that they were there for the purpose of investigating evidence of criminal conduct. However, they are any officer is lawfully allowed to approach a residence to do a knock and talk. And that knock and talk may be for the specific and lawful purpose of speaking to a homeowner if the homeowner opens the front door to speak to the officers.
But Aprisco doesn't say that. Aprisco says that if the officer is conducting a knock and talk with the intent to investigate marijuana, that is an unreasonable search. It's the purpose for which the officer entered the premises that controls, not what he took with him.
Your Honor, I think one other factual distinction I wanted to make before I address that question was that there is an argument can be made that the officers in no way, let me rephrase. The testimony of one of the officers is that the marijuana was detectable from the public road. I believe it was investigator or Detective Hamilton. I think this is on page 112 of the appendix. He testifies that he parked on the public roadway, and as he exited his vehicle, the odor of marijuana was immediately detectable. So at that point, he has not encroached upon the curtilage of the defendant's residence. In addition, if this court wants to, affirm under the right result, wrong reasons doctrine, I think this court would be required to act as fact finder to resolve certain issues about where specifically the officers obtained or detected the marijuana odor.
Let me ask you about your argument that the odor was detected from the street. the affidavit said your affiant and Detective Medina accompanied Detective Mills and the GAL to the front door of the residence where they found Sarah Smith. Your affiant smelled the odor of marijuana coming from inside the residence. So if that was included in the affidavit, it's clearly evidence that was discovered once they had entered the curtilage and up to the front porch of the house. So wouldn't, if that was an improper search, wouldn't that have to be excluded from the consideration of the affidavit?
If the issue of whether of excluding certain statements from the affidavit would only be appropriate if either defendant had challenged that the affidavit was insufficient to support probable cause. That would be contrary to both defendants' positions in the trial court. In the trial court, Ms. Smith's position was that probable cause existed 2 weeks prior to the officer's arrival at her residence. Even on brief, on page 20 of her brief, she argues that her position has been from the outset that law enforcement had probable cause 2 weeks prior to coming to the home and should have obtained a search warrant prior to the entire narcotics.
But the Commonwealth took the position that probable, and made the argument that probable cause didn't exist until they went on the premises. So are we getting into an approbate, reprobate situation?
No, I think we're, Your Honor, I think what we're seeing is that the trial court, in the trial court, the defendants never challenged the search warrant. The search warrant is presumptively valid. They have not assigned any cross error to try to invalidate the search warrant. Their argument was that the trial court, or that the officers should have obtained a search warrant 2 weeks prior. However, there's no authority in support of that position that the fact that the officers wanted to continue their investigation to see if they could obtain additional evidence to strengthen what some could argue was a marginal finding of probable cause by approaching the residence and asking to speak with the homeowner to determine if there was any other additional evidence. It's also possible that the officers could have found evidence that would have exonerated these defendants. However, what we have...
Mr. Curry, you can keep going, but I just want to warn you, you're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I see that now. If I could just quickly wrap up and save the rest of my time for rebuttal, I would say that in this case, the trial court made findings that the officers had probable cause before they entered the property. That finding is unchallenged on appeal, and that finding, the legal significance of that finding is that the officers had an independent source of probable cause that was completely and wholly independent from any sort of allegation of unlawful police conduct. And for that reason, the independent source doctrine renders the Commonwealth's evidence that was obtained pursuant to an unchallenged search warrant that was supported by probable cause admissible at trial. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the court?
Not at this time.
Judge Alston?
No, thank you.
Judge Patty?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go on to Ms. Chernin. You'll have 15 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, this is Monica Chernin, and I'm going to warn you ahead of time that I have a pretty significant cough that may appear during this argument. I would like to start with the position that the police conduct in this case was outrageous. The fact that 16 days and then 14 days prior to the day that they came onto the property, they had what we believe to be probable cause, did not mean that they still had that same probable cause when they finally showed up 16 days later. The point is that they had sufficient information and could have sought a search warrant and allowed the proper approach to having a neutral and detached magistrate decide what they were going to be able to do.
Ms. Chernin, are you the speaker? Would you pick up the handset so we can break in intermittently?
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
This is Judge Petty. The problem with your argument, it seems to me, is that when the police discovered the contraband, they had a search warrant. And as Mr. Curry has mentioned, you did not challenge the probable cause for the search. You didn't challenge the search warrant in any way. You simply challenged the protective sweep or the whatever they did prior to obtaining the search warrant. So how can the court suppress the evidence when it was discovered pursuant to what we have to assume was a lawfully issued search warrant?
Because I don't even think you get to that search warrant in this situation. I'm going to back up to one of the questions that was asked of Mr. Curry in order to answer that. In my opinion, what was done here was that the law enforcement officers essentially used the unwitting guardian ad litem as their drug-sniffing dog. They used her as their mechanism to get onto the property, to get the door opened, to have a basis by which they would then have probable cause to get their search warrant. The search warrant that they got has nothing in it that's additional to what they had the 16 days prior, other than the odor of the marijuana.
I understand that, but the search warrant says that the police were told by the children, or through the father, that there was marijuana growing in the basement of the house. Now, that's probable cause right there.
Right.
So if we scrub everything else out of that affidavit, why isn't that sufficient under Williams and Dawson to validate the search warrant?
Because I think you also have to look at the police misconduct in the way that this was handled, and that goes to the Walls case. That, granted,
the counsel's subjective intent of police officers is irrelevant.
Judge, I don't think this is subjective intent when they have 16 days to make a plan as to what they are going to do, and that includes creating a ruse of a welfare check.
But, counsel, the law is clear that you don't look to when the officers are not bound by any certain time for obtaining a search warrant, as long as at the time they obtain it, it's not stale.
And I understand that, but in the normal course of things, a search warrant is based upon their investigation, not upon bringing in a guardian ad litem who serves as their mechanism to get to the house and get inside the home.
Can you help us with any authority, any case of law that supports the argument that the police can't engage in a ruse in order to gather evidence?
No, I don't think I can, because they do it all the time. But what we can support is that the court should not be condoning outrageous police conduct. And it should not be condoning behavior that is so intentional. Everything that they did was intentional.
Counsel,
it was a plan that was devised.
Counsel.
Yes, ma'am.
Isn't the whole analysis, Fourth Amendment analysis, based on objective standards?
Okay, and even if it is, objectively looking at this, they behaved outrageously and flagrantly. I can't imagine anybody looking at this not thinking that they were so overzealous in their conduct in the way that they handled this and some of the things that they did. I mean, if we look at their protective sweep, which I don't think there's any argument to be made that it was an inappropriate protective sweep, they then leave an officer in the house for an hour and a half while they go and obtain a search warrant. So all of their behaviors were beyond what they were allowed to do. And if this court condones that, then this court basically opens the door and says that at any time police can behave in the most outrageous manner, and we're just going to forget about the fact that there's a Fourth Amendment and people have rights.
Well, Mr. Chairman, suppose we accept that argument and we say that what the police did at the house was outrageous and we're not going to condone it. So what we're going to do is we're going to exclude from our consideration anything in the affidavit for the search warrant that they discovered once they went on the property. The affidavit still has probable cause to support the magistrate's issuance of the search warrant. And that's where we keep trying to find what's your answer to that argument.
Well, does it still have probable cause, though, when it was issued by the magistrate based upon everything that was fully listed, including the odor of marijuana coming through the door?
Haven't you argued throughout this case that the police did have probable cause before they went to the residence?
I said they had probable cause.
And wasn't all the information
16 days prior? I can't guarantee that what they had 16 days prior to getting there was still what they had 16 days later.
But what knowledge did they have 16 days earlier when you concede they had probable cause that was not included in the affidavit for the search warrant?
They did not have an odor coming from the front door, which is what they use as their basis to walk in.
But no, I'm talking about the information that they had 16 days earlier. What did they omit from the affidavit?
What of those things did they admit? Did they omit?
Let me look at it quickly. Because I think primarily the information they had came from the children that there was marijuana growing in the basement.
I know that what they did was they added about 5 pages of boilerplate stuff that had nothing to do with anything. They added that they could hear a fan running from inside a room.
Misunderstand my question. My question is, what information that they did have 16 days earlier did they fail to include in the search
warrant? Oh, okay. I would have to say I don't think there's anything.
So if you had conceded that there was probable cause 16 days earlier, there must be probable cause in that search warrant, excluding what they learned when they went to the residence.
Well, not if within that 16-day period of time what they ultimately found had been moved out of the house. I mean, that's where the problem is that
you don't look to what they actually found during the search as a basis to determine whether the warrant was valid or not, do you?
No, but what I'm saying is that my concession is that I agree that they had probable cause way back in the beginning when this information was first given to them. That was my concession.
But you did not argue to the trial judge at the time that you made your arguments, you didn't argue that there was no probable cause to support the warrant.
No, I argued repeatedly that they had probable cause 16 days prior. That's what I argued.
And you didn't challenge the fact that they had probable cause at the time that they obtained the warrant?
I did not.
Okay. Could you address Judge Petty's question to Mr. Curry about the 5A18, are you suggesting that the Commonwealth is barred at this point as the appellant?
I think the Commonwealth is arguing matters in their brief that they did not argue at trial. That was the judge's point as well, that they were trying to come in the back door and create error in the record.
You still have about 4.5 minutes, counsel.
quite honestly do not think that there is much further that I can argue that was not in the brief and that I haven't said this morning. My biggest issue with this case is the behavior of law enforcement, the fact that they sat on information that might have been appropriate and didn't use it, and that they hooked somebody into this to act as their agent. And the more I read other cases, the more I felt like their use of the guardian ad litem was to make her into their drug dog. As I said, she was their hook.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Judge Petty, any questions?
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Judge Alston?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Curry. You've got 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I think the issue of there was definite confusion in the trial court about the significance of probable cause. But I think that the Commonwealth, in its brief in opposition to the motion to suppress, raised the issue that there was a probable cause to support the issuance of a search warrant, and that a search warrant was obtained and executed, and that the only evidence that the Commonwealth sought to admit at a trial at a later date was evidence that was obtained and seized pursuant to that search warrant. And the fact that there has been no attack of the search warrant means that the counsel has effectively conceded that there is an independent source to support the issuance of the search warrant.
Now, let me ask you this question. Assuming that we find, consistent with Ms. Chernin's argument, that everything that the police did at the point of getting the search warrant was bad, is it your position that you win based on the search warrant standing alone?
Yes, Your Honor. The fact that the search warrant is supported by probable cause means that there was an independent source that was unrelated to any constitutional violation.
But basically, your argument is that, by and large, this is a straight search warrant case.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, my argument is, and I raise it in the reply brief, is that this case is virtually indistinguishable from Krebs. In that case, there was a marijuana odor that was determined. I know this was an unpublished case, but there was a marijuana odor detected coming from a residence. There was a warrantless entry. There was a similar no harm, no foul, because no evidence was seized during that entry. There was a search warrant that was based on probable cause that was derived from independent and lawful sources. And this court affirmed the trial court's denial of the motion to suppress in that case.
But doesn't that argument presume that the police did not conduct a search when they first set foot on the property and smelled the marijuana?
Well, the trial court found that they had probable cause from the detection of the marijuana from the property. So I think it's at least implied that the trial court found that the detection of that marijuana odor was lawful. And that finding has not been challenged by Ms. Smith or Mr. Cockrell on appeal.
But don't you have a different posture in the context of a Commonwealth's appeal, where you have a trial judge making some factual findings in a 13-page letter opinion? Isn't it a little bit different?
Well, certainly any conflicting evidence would be resolved in the favor of the defendants at this point. However, if the court is referring to, I guess, the Jardine arguments, the court never addressed any sort of issue of a common law trespassory test, Jardine's analysis, a Prisco analysis in this case. So there are no specific findings in this record about when specifically the odor was detected, or whether the officer was on the curtilage of the home at the time that it was detected. And I think that to resolve this matter on Jardine and Prisco would require this court to make those factual findings, because the conflict in the testimony about when precisely the odor was detected and by what means were not specifically made by the trial court.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Curry. Your time is up. Judge Petty, any questions?
No further questions, thanks.
Judge Alston?
Thank you.